Hello, everyone, and welcome to the You Should Run podcast. I'm your host, Tony Heil, council member in Bridgeport, Pennsylvania, nestled between King of Prussia and Norristown, a little bit west of Philadelphia, but not too far west. But today we're going much further west than the Philadelphia area, further west than Harrisburg and Pittsburgh and Ohio and Indiana and Illinois. The furthest west we've gone, I think, though, we've talked with people from Montana. As you know, we've talked with people who have run for office in different states and for different kinds of offices, whether it's parthenotary or Congress or everything in between. And today I'm very excited to talk with my first guest from Nevada. Her name is Sarah Peters. She's going to talk about her experience running for office, what motivated her to get involved in politics, and you know, what she wants to get done and how we can all make a better difference in our communities, no matter what state we live in, even if it's not as cool as Nevada or Pennsylvania. So, Assemblywoman Peters, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for having me on. And thanks for doing this podcast. I think it's really cool that you're highlighting some of the highlightable areas in running for politics that we've seen in the last couple of years.
Well, before we get into that, do you know how many elected offices there are in the country?
I don't.
So that's part of what got me into this, is there are 500,000 elected offices.
500,000.
And once you start to think that the population of the country is 350 million almost, around there, so it's a smaller percentage population-wise, but you got city, borough council members like me, mayors, judges, state legislators like you, Congress, and everything in between. So it adds up once you think about it, but man, it's a lot, and there's a lot of races that go uncontested.
Yes, we see that a lot in Nevada.
But you were in a somewhat contested race. I was looking up your election, and on the one hand, I started looking up and going, you know what? Maybe this isn't the most exciting race. Maybe it's something that people won't relate to. And then I thought, no, this is a really important person to talk with, because you, the contested race you had was an open seat, right?
Yes.
I can't tell your story. Tell me your story about why you ran and what makes your district and your election a little bit more unique, because every one of them is unique, I think.
Yeah, for sure. It took me about 2 years to decide to actually run for office. I work in environmental regulatory permitting and compliance, and I work primarily with tribal governments in the state of Nevada and California. When you work in the depths of permitting and compliance, you get really familiar with state law. I got some really good experience working within the nexus of state and federal regulations and how they work together and the impact that those can have on communities and the development in those communities. And one of the things that I consistently heard was like, this is just how we've always done it, and this is how it should be done. And I'm a problem solver. My background's in engineering. When I come across a problem, I'm always looking for a more effective solution. I'm looking for efficiencies, places where we can make it better, and I don't like that answer of this is just how it's always been done. So I started to look around to figure out how we could change those things, like the standards in the world of regulatory permitting and compliance with regards to environmental issues, and figured out that really there weren't a lot of folks who had enough experience or background in the area in our elected positions to be able to make educated decisions on those issues, right? So they were really dependent on the narratives that came from lobbyists or other experts in the area. And I actually was asked to be an expert in a conversation around environmental issues in Nevada, and that was the first experience I'd really had with the legislature. But coming away from that, I realized that we really needed to have someone in a state position who understood the issues, the environmental issues, the way that I did, to be able to make those changes. So I started to look around for someone who could fill in that position, right? And I think that we create these narratives of character, who is a politician, right? And so I started to look for someone who looked like a politician, but could do the things that I saw needed to be done. And as I was creating this like idea of what that person may look like and where to look for that person, I ended up developing really my own resume. And it was kind of shocking. I was like, oh, okay, well, geez, I mean, I have all these like these experiences and references, and it was terrifying to talk to my husband about that and be like, hey, I like maybe I want to take on this thing because I see this gap in this area that that really needs to be fixed, and it's been a passion of mine for a long time to be invested in like fixing our relationship with the environment, and ultimately decided to run for that office, and was in a neighborhood with an open seat for the assembly. And when I announced my running, I found out that there were a couple of other people who were interested in the same seat. I think I heard at least 7 people who were interested in the same seat. One of the beautiful things about the area that I represent the most urban dense population base of Reno, Nevada. And that includes the university and our downtown and midtown districts, as well as a couple of urban neighborhoods. And it is one of the most progressive districts in the state, which I think is why it got so much attention when it became an open seat. So I started, as I started hearing the names of the people who were running, I knew a couple of them. One of them I've known since I was a child. He's a small business owner in town, and a nice guy, wonderful guy. And then I met with another woman who was running, and she was newer to the area. And one of the things about this part of Reno is that it is a small town. People like to know their neighbors here, and I was concerned about that, right? Like, when you're brand new to an area, do you really know what the population base wants? And could she go to the state and effectively represent me as a Reno person in the legislature? And then another man who I met, he announced at like the very last day you can announce, and was a wonderful candidate as well, but it got in a little bit late in the race. But anyways, among these candidates, I was still the only person who had a background in science and who was interested in taking on and tackling the issues of environmental regulation the way I was talking about. And because that's most important to me, I stuck with that narrative.
Something that's important in that area? Like, because you're looking at I don't know Reno too well. So is that, obviously you knew that it was good for the policy, but you know, if you're running somewhere and they don't really care about the environment, then that's not necessarily helpful as a candidate, I assume.
Yeah, no, that actually was an interesting issue that came up for me. I wanted to run as much of an authentic and transparent race as I could, and I did not want to, especially because we were in a primary race with 4 progressive Democrats. I didn't want it to get dirty, right? I wanted to highlight the ways that I was different or the things that were important to me. And when I knocked door to door talking to people about like wanting to earn their vote through the policies that I wanted to direct and the areas that I was interested in and the history, my experiences in life and what I would bring to the legislature, and encourage them to look up the other candidates as well and see really who, like, what is it that is ringing true for you in the narrative of who's running for office in this area. But in Reno, we have our major waterway. So Nevada is a landlocked state, and we don't have a lot of water, desert state. And most of our water ends up in terminus lakes, so there's no outlet to the ocean. But in Reno, we have the Truckee River, which runs from Lake Tahoe down to Pyramid Lake. So, and we have access to some really wonderful skiing in the Sierra Nevadas, a lot of wonderful hiking, hunting, fishing opportunities in northern Nevada. And I think there is a significant value to our population base of ensuring that our public lands are high quality and that everyone has access to them. So I think the narrative of running on environmental issues played really well in this community. So I stuck with that narrative and just ran a walking and talking to people door to door, talking to as many folks as I could about the things that were important to me, and encouraging them to do their own research. One of the hardest things for me was to ask for people's support if they weren't ready for it. You know, if there were some people who I would talk to who were jazzed and were like, "You have my support 100%." A lot of people who were looking for a female to represent them. There was a pretty decent narrative of, we just want someone, we will not vote for a man right now. This is a time for women. And I think that showed, right, in that we have a female majority legislature now, that there was a really strong case for women running for office in Nevada, at least, although we saw it across the country as well. And at the end of the day, we don't do polling in those kinds of places, right, really. So I didn't know where I stood. I just knew that I had talked to a huge number of people in my area, Democrats in particular, since we are a primary race state, and that I felt good about the conversations that I had, and that I felt like I ran a really solid race, and was really honest and true to myself and the policies that I was interested in pursuing and felt really strongly about. And when I found in the night that the primaries were calculated, I ended up winning my race at 43%. So in a four-person Democratic progressive primary, I won at 43%. And there are a lot of things you can take away from that, right? There are a lot of things about me being a young mom, me being having blue hair, me being a scientist, how much I walked and knocked doors. Like, there are a lot of variables that come into play there, but I think that there's also some really interesting pieces that you can pull out about where people's feelings are about politics right now, right? And we're interested in a younger generation, that we are interested in women showing up, that we are interested in science being the basis of policy, that we are interested in ensuring our environmental regulations are strong despite what's happening at the federal level. And I think all of those things really showed up in my race.
So, and I totally agree with all that. It's very, and I don't know if it's empowering to you or not to have people respond in that way about, you know, they want to have a woman representing them, because I could see why it's empowering, but also you're like, no, listen, I have these ideas. That's not the only reason, but it's also exciting to me as a straight white male, age 18 to 45, as Homer Simpson would joke, like, Nevada is the only state with a female majority legislature.
That's crazy, isn't it? It's absolutely crazy.
Because on the one hand, when you hear about progress, you're like, oh, that's really good. We're making progress. On the other hand, it just means 49 other states, it's men making the call. And, I mean, I know that, like, some people say will not be real and it won't be truly fair until it's, like, 25 states. But it's going to take a while. 25 to 25 wouldn't even be enough, because you got to fix some stuff when it comes to how we look at politics. I'm in Pennsylvania, and our gender breakdown in politics is terrible. But you have an environmental background, and you're talking about the regulations. Now, if I didn't know anything about you, and I heard that someone is running for office because they want to address environmental regulations, that almost sounds like a worrisome thing to me. Like, oh, they're running to loosen regulations. Maybe it's because I'm in Pennsylvania, and that's probably what I'd hear. But what did you see? Because you're going to things about climate change and all sorts of environmental issues. What were the things that you saw that were an impediment or needed to be addressed?
So I think that's really common, and I think we're kind of seeing a narrative in the federal government as well around this area, this issue. But our state Environmental Protection Agency is very siloed. So each entity under the umbrella of environmental protection works very very siloed to itself and under its own set of regulations, and there is very little leveraging that occurs among those agencies to ensure that policies are meeting the highest quality of environmental standard that we as legislators are try to get to when we establish policy. So breaking down that silo is that siloizing that happens was is probably one of my highest priorities. I'm trying to find ways to bridge these entities so that we at the state are looking more comprehensively at our natural resources and how we treat them, and that we're getting the most bang for our buck. We are a state that is heavily reliant on mining for our economies, and I think that we need to, as a state, really take into account what that means, that we look at what good actors and what bad actors have done to the state and set a baseline for expectations of industry when you come to Nevada and you want to be a part of this economy, and you participate in the mining industry and the use of our natural resources, that you treat them in a certain way, that you treat our communities in a certain way, and if you don't, that we have some kind of enforcement mechanism for dealing with that. The other issue that I see, and this has to do with, I think, both renewable energy and climate change, is the consistent deference of maintenance for our infrastructure. And as we start to address the deferred maintenance of infrastructure from the recession, that we're not necessarily taking into account the future, the way that the future of electric vehicles or broadband internet or other underground utilities, how that fits into how we replace and upgrade our infrastructure, and I think that has ramifications to environmental risk exposures for certain demographics that are really important for us to be talking about. Historically, we see marginalized communities placed adjacent to industries that are known polluting industries, right? If you take a look at an overlay of maps of coal-fired power plants across the United States and an overlay of where tribal land is, there's a very consistent situation where a coal-fired power plant is adjacent to a tribal reservation across the country.
Wow, not even just in Nevada.
Not just in Nevada. And those kinds of things, taking into account those kinds of things as we move forward in economic development with industry and in infrastructure maintenance and where we want to be as a state, just keeping that in mind, or having a process to keep that in mind so that we're taking the best care of our communities that we can. Social justice issues are a huge part of my personal narrative, and what I want to see all policy be kind of hyper-centric around, that we're ensuring that our marginalized communities are being uplifted, or that we're taking into account how we can make policies more equitable to different communities as we review them and as we vote on them and legislate that way.
Do you think, now that you have a female majority legislature, do you think that makes a difference in terms of how you address those issues? You feel more comfortable with where things might be going on any of those things, they get it? Or are there other things that make your new legislature unique to address those issues?
Both. I for sure see that women, and we've heard this from our female senators as well. So Nevada has two female senators. And they identify that women are directed internally, right, to get things done. How do we make this happen? How do we make this work for people? But also having like a sense of, you know, moral compass of compassion, and listening to the voices of like the lesser heard, and not just just pushing those to the side and saying, well, that's not loud enough for this issue. So I think that that is a piece of it. But I also think that this was really fascinating, right? So we have an Assembly Democratic Caucus, and there are, or we're 29 of us. We had a loss, lost one of our members to a sudden illness in the middle of session. So we were down to 28 members, I think. But anyway, so we have this caucus room where we all get together. And my first day in there, I looked around at the demographics of our Democratic Assembly caucus. And it was fascinating to see that the white males in the room were the minority in the room, that we had more people of color and more women of color and more females than white straight men. And to me, of all things in our legislature, that means the most. Mm-hmm. We have a truly representative legislature that has people. We have everything from women who are teachers, women of color who are teachers, to an immigrant from Ethiopia, to a teamster from a union down in Southern Nevada, to a scientist, to, you know, you name it, we have someone in that demographic representing it. And I think that really adds to how our conversations occur in committee, and how we address policy.
It sounds like it would be much more comfortable for someone to bring up a minority position or something that's a personal type of topic, whether it's sexual health or civil rights, human rights, child care things. When you're one of 50, you feel uneasy about bringing up certain topics if you feel like you might feel some shame over it. Not that it's shameful, but just the reaction of others. Right. If you're in a space like that, it feels like you can bring up so many more issues that you might not otherwise bring up, you or someone else.
Yeah, I agree. And I think we saw some of that in Nevada. We passed a Trust Nevada Women's Act, which Nevada has had abortion rights written into to our laws since I think the 90s. And the Trust Nevada Women Act was preemptive this session to clean up that language and ensure that those protections are there regardless of what happens at the federal level around Roe versus Wade and abortion rights. We also addressed issues of criminal justice. We passed a significant criminal justice reform. We also had some legislation around, so Nevada has passed legal recreational marijuana and medical marijuana, and we passed legislation this last session that expunges records for people who have charges strictly related to marijuana use and possession, and I think that we have some very strong voices. Oh, and we also address some immigration issues too, right? Making state resources more available to people who need them, right? And that can be people who are in poverty, people who need housing assistance, people who need access to certain things regardless of their status, because if you pay taxes into our state system, then you should have access to resources to be able to be a citizen in our state. And I think that kind of progress, that kind of progress is something that we could only do with the demographics that we have. And it was phenomenal being there for it.
Yeah, I mean, did you expect that when you ran, that like you would be in this situation? Was that enticing to you as just a person? I mean, I can imagine saying, "Wow, I could be in that environment as opposed to something else."
So we had a really interesting mayor, governor's race.
Right. And, I was following that. I follow John Ralston, and so I hear about...
Yes.
Which he's fun to listen to because he seems smarter than other political reporters.
Yeah, he is. So in our governor's race, we had an open seat, and we had two fairly strong candidates, one Republican and one Democrat, and it was a tight race. Polling wise, there was no assurances that it would go red or blue. I didn't have my heart set on what it was going to look like at the legislature when I got there. But I was so surprised, in the best kind of way, surprised with what happened, and really appreciative of how Nevada showed up to support each other and to follow the some of the narratives of the people who were running in the areas that they wanted to be addressing issues, and was really proud of how Nevada is Nevadans really wanted to step up and stand up for people who need it the most.
So it sounds like you guys are leading the way in a way that other states aren't. And it sounds courageous in a way, too. Like you said, you didn't know what you were getting into. It could have been not disastrous. I think you had a good chance of winning, but, you know, it could have been a much less enjoyable experience, I guess you could say. And do you see yourselves, you as one assemblywoman or the assembly as a general, like, as an example for the rest of the country?
I hope so. I think that so personally, I have three kids. We were talking about that earlier,
right?
And part of how I want to be as a legislator is to be a role model for my kids, so that they see that you can do things and make a difference in areas that are important to you, regardless of what your history looks like or what, you know, what your background is or what society thinks someone who wants to do the things you want to do should look like. And I hope that our state does the same thing, that our legislature does the same thing. And I think this last session, I felt like I was a part of that. Additionally, I was at the National Conference of State Legislators and ran into some folks from other states who were not in the Democratic majority. They're in the Democratic, like, super minority. And they were saying, you know, it's nice to have a state like Nevada to look to and have hope for, because it is so demoralizing right now in our state, and we just can't get anything done. So I have heard that that Nevada is somewhere that folks are looking at to keep the faith that we can move forward in democratic policy and progressive policy, despite what's going on in some other states and really nationally.
Yeah, you know, as a father and you as a mother, I look at my kids because they're the same ages, basically, and I feel like you can't not do something in this time, right? Like, the president's crazier every day, and it's not just that he's saying nutty things, but the implications of the policy. So it's almost like a responsibility, I feel, for in 5 years when my son is, in fifth grade or whatever grade he'll be in then, and when he's in high school, that I can go, look, we did something. We may not have fixed everything. There may have been bumps, but, like, we didn't sit back, and neither did you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a huge driver right now, especially for moms that I've talked to who run for office, that we have a space open right now. Women in particular, there's been space made for us to show up, and that there's a hunger for our voices to be heard, and a huge driver is for our kids, right? I can't sit behind a desk pretending like the world's not falling apart and be okay with it, and I think that is a narrative across the country for parents in particular, but for women as well.
Yeah, it's also bonkers to me when I see people who can and think, yeah, it's going to all work itself out. That's politics, because this is not how things should be.
So, yeah, one of the big pieces of who I am and how I show up is checking my privilege as often as I can. And that privilege includes that I could sit behind a desk and I could sit at my house and I could engage with my kids in a way that negates all of these terrible things that are going on, because they don't directly affect us, right? Like, I could ignore it. But if I do that, then what am I setting my kids up for?
Right.
Right? And I don't know what their future is going to hold. I don't know where they're going to land. I don't know who the next oppressed demographic is going to be, and it could be my daughters or it could be my son. They deserve better than that. They deserve for us to stand up for whomever people show up as, and for us to make a stand that we really, a policy needs to be made for everybody, that we can't leave people out just because they don't look like us or just because they don't live like us. That to me is a huge piece of how I address policy and why I ran for office in the first place.
Well, that is a terrific motivator, and I 100% agree and hope there's a lot of other people who feel the same way. Before we finish here, the whole purpose of the podcast is You Should Run. Obviously, you should run as well for re-election, but why should more people run for office, and what resource... Is there any particular resource that you might recommend?
You should run because when you were five, someone asked you what you wanted to be when you grew up. And whatever it was that got in your way, or whatever it was that you stumbled on as you made your way into adulthood, that's the reason you should run. You should help clear the path for the next person who wants to be what you wanted to be when you were five.
Wow, that's a great answer. You should write that down, and like, I'm gonna need to. I'm glad this is recorded, because I'm gonna have to like see if I can make a meme out of that. Remind me.
And resource, use the people around you. Like, one of the best parts about our neighborhoods and running in a neighborhood that you love and care about is the people who are accessible in that neighborhood. People around you have amazing skill sets that you may not have. It may be graphic design. It may be PR. It may be handwriting addresses on envelopes. Tap into those people and get them engaged too. It is much easier for people to show up at the ballot boxes when they feel like they've invested in a race that matters to them. So engage them in your race. Be engaged in someone else's race because you care, because you're good at something that can add to that race or that can add to the policy making in your state or in your region, and take advantage of people's desire to be involved right now.
Well, I think that's terrific, and I hope more people do it. I hope you know you have at least one fan in Pennsylvania, hopefully a lot more after this. I was really excited to talk with you because of hearing so many good things about what's going on in Nevada, and hopefully we can get more people who are like you with the different backgrounds to run for office as well.
Yeah, thanks so much, Tony. I really appreciate it, and I really appreciate taking on this podcast and spreading the word to folks who may feel a little more isolated in the political process.
Terrific. Well, if you're listening, make sure to listen to our past podcasts. They're on iTunes and Stitcher and, of course, on Podbean. Follow us on Facebook and check out and let me know if there's other episodes or other people you'd like to recommend. Maybe, Sarah, you'll recommend some guests to be on here, too. And good luck in Nevada.
Yeah, thanks so much. You too.